Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Grimes.
We're here today in this matter. I think the primary issue is whether or not there was probable cause for the stop and the arrest of Mr. Jones. We've set out in the brief and in the complaint the entire process that occurred that morning. Mr. Jones' recitation of what happened has not been challenged at any point in terms of what happened that evening. Mr. Jones, about 2 o'clock in the morning, was traveling in Elkhart, Indiana. There was no one else on the street. The officer indicated that he saw Mr. Jones. He was traveling in the opposite direction. He was traveling east. Mr. Jones was traveling south. That the two passed each other. He then turned around and got behind Mr. Jones at that point, saying that he did that because his moving radar suggested that Mr. Jones may have been exceeding the 35-mile-per-hour limit. So he got behind him and started following him, and he testified that Mr. Jones was swerving within his own lane, and therefore that was the reason why he stopped Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones,
of course, the officer says he clocked him doing 53. Couldn't the police officer have clocked him before Jones noticed the officer? I understand his testimony was once he noticed the officer, he knew he was going 35. He knew it was a speed trap, and so.
Yes.
But couldn't the police officer, as I said, have clocked him before he noticed the police officer was there?
Certainly, that's possible. Although there's no indication as to when the police officer started to track his speed. And so Mr. Jones is proceeding down the highway. Once again, no other cars any place, according to Mr. Jones, which is not contested by the officer. Jones, knowing that there is a speed trap, once he crosses into Balgo Township, before he crosses out of Elkhart, he observes a car sitting on his left headed east. Mr. Jones observed this vehicle. He couldn't make out what the vehicle was, what type of vehicle it was. And as he passed the officer, he looked over, and the officer looked at him, and they made, according to Mr. Jones, eye contact. Shortly after Mr. Jones passed the officer, according to Mr. Jones, the officer turned and made a U-turn and got behind Mr. Jones and followed him for several seconds before he turned on his emergency lights. After that, the officer walks up to Mr. Jones's vehicle, and I believe he asked for his license at that point. Mr. Jones fully complied with everything that the officer asked of him. The officer never told Mr. Jones why he stopped Mr. Jones. The officer then he asked Mr. Jones whether he had been drinking that night. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, and Mr. Jones testified that he had a drink the following evening, the previous evening, between 6 and 7, I believe. So between the 6 and 7, where Mr. Jones at home, eating dinner with his family, drank what he said was a 12-ounce bottle of beer. 7 or 8 hours had elapsed between then. In addition, Mr. Jones, when he left home, went to his sister's house in Elkhart, and he ate while he was there snacks.
Okay, but yes. The officer doesn't know any of this. What the officer knows is that he just clocked your client going 53 in a 35-mile zone. He's swerving within his lane. He exhibits the telltale signs of intoxication when he pulls him over, including, I think, the odor of intoxication, the watery, bloodshot eyes, everything that we hear in OWI court on a daily basis. He's got all of it. He takes him out of the car. He fails the field sobriety test. He blows into the breathalyzer and is over the legal limit. All of that is more than adequate for an arrest for OWI. Plus, he refuses to accompany the officer back to the station to do the test at the station, which is probable cause for an OWI refusal arrest. You know, all this extraneous detail doesn't matter.
Only if what you have recited is true. Only if what you've recited is true.
The officer documented all this, testified to all this. That's probable cause.
Well, with all due respect, I disagree. An officer can testify about anything. He can say whatever he chooses. That doesn't mean that it's true. What it does when my client says that's not true, it creates a genuine material issue of fact on the issue of probable cause. Now, with regard to failing the field sobriety test, here you have a man who has a disease who cannot, if he's going to walk straight, he has to place one deformed bow leg in front of the other in order to try and walk a straight line. So on the failing of the sobriety test, there is evidence in the record as to the severity of the bow legs of Mr. Jones. With regard to the PBT test, Officer Snyder relied on a test allegedly given by Officer Moore. Officer Moore didn't have a PB test equipment. And if you'll recall, looking at the videos, you never saw Officer Moore giving Mr. Jones a PBT test. Before Officer Moore arrived on the scene, Officer Snyder was there, but his video camera wasn't working. So Officer Snyder goes to Mr. Jones' vehicle and gives him two PBT tests. He puts it in the window, Mr. Jones blows in it, he takes it back, he looks at it, and he presses the button, which erases whatever the results were. He did that twice. And then he went back to his car, and at that point in time, Officer Moore was arriving. Officer Snyder says he asked Officer Moore to give Mr. Jones a PBT. Officer Moore's video camera makes it very plain that he never approached Mr. Jones. He stood to the side. He stood by his car. He never gave Mr. Jones a PBT test. But Officer Snyder and Officer Moore says that he did, and it came up 96 or 98. But he never gave him a test. Officer Moore didn't even look at what is presumed, according to Officer Moore, to have been a test result. He didn't even see it. So then, in terms of the refusal, if you look at the record, you will see, as Mr. Jones suggested, Officer Snyder was talking to him about taking a test, and it seemed as though he was talking to him about the same thing in two different ways at the same time. He was totally confused. And if you look at the record, the court says, well, it appears as though he did agree at first, and he did. And so now we're on the way to the police station in Officer Moore's vehicle. Officer Snyder never showed up again. He gave it to Officer Moore, who was a junior officer. My time is up.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Grimes. Ms. Heaveneth?
May it please the Court, the District Court properly granted summary judgment in this case for the reasons discussed earlier. The plaintiff failed to provide any evidence or facts to show that the officers did not have a reasonable belief in probable cause for Mr. Jones' stop and arrest.
So this issue, counsel argues that there really was a factual dispute as to whether or not Jones was driving, and he said he was going 35 because he knew it was a speed trap. So isn't that enough? I mean, is this the gun, the speed gun, decisive, as the district court seemed to say?
It is, Your Honor, because Mr. Jones needed to show that the officer's reasonable belief in the radar gun clocking him at 53 and a 35, his belief in that was not reasonable. And that the weaving in his lane was not reasonable to establish probable cause.
So there was no printout or anything from the gun, or it's basically essentially the officer saying that's what the gun showed.
Correct. That's correct. Most importantly, though, to that issue of probable cause, the district court also found the officers were entitled to qualified immunity. Mr. Jones has not appealed that issue. Therefore, that issue has been waived, and that alone is dispositive of the question of probable cause and both the stop and the arrest.
What happened with the OWI refusal charge?
Ultimately, I believe he was acquitted. That may have been dropped. The OWI may have been the only thing that went to trial, but he was acquitted ultimately.
Acquitted of OWI?
I believe
so. And the refusal charge was dropped?
I believe that was dropped. Ultimately, I'm not quite sure on that, Your Honor. In terms of the refusal, though, that's another important point, is that in terms of his arrest, there only needs to be probable cause for an arrest, and it doesn't need to be the OWI itself. Here we have undisputed evidence. Mr. Jones has not provided any facts to dispute that he refused to take the chemical test at the station. That alone is sufficient for an arrest for refusal. And as this court has held in the Abbott versus Sangamon County case, which we've cited in our brief, the offense for which probable cause exists need not be the subjective offense for which the officer was conducting the arrest. The officers, as then held in Ramos versus City of Chicago, the officers need probable cause for an arrest. So again, even if there's a question as to whether or not he was intoxicated, which there is not here, they certainly had probable cause to arrest him for refusal. Mr. Jones, in his brief, admits that he told Officer Snyder he was not going to take the test. He stated while being handcuffed, he did not want to take the test. That's on page 21 of their brief. And then again at the station, Officer Moore asked Mr. Jones again, are you refusing to take the test? And Mr. Jones again refused. That was also in the presence of Officer Gorbal, who then appropriately ran the refusal ticket. And again, as Your Honor correctly stated, all of the evidence in this case points to probable cause or reasonable belief in probable cause for the arrest. I was going to address the other issues. Monell, counsel has not raised that here, although he's appealed it. First of all, there's no underlying constitutional violation, both because there was reasonable belief in probable cause and because of the qualified immunity decision, which has not been appealed here. Beyond that, there has been no proof of an unconstitutional custom policy or practice within the city of Elkhart to establish a claim under Monell. The equal protection claim that plaintiff has appealed, which was decided sua sponte by the court, first he failed to plead it in his complaint. I've cited to the court Troutvetter versus Quick, which holds that the plaintiff needs to allege a deprivation of specific constitutional rights, not generalized allegations of constitutional deprivations. So he did need to plead that, and the court pointed that out in its ruling on a discovery matter, which is included in the short appendix. Beyond that, the court can grant summary judgment sua sponte if the plaintiff is on notice that he has to come forward with all of his evidence. He is on notice in two ways. One, in the summary judgment rule, which tells him he has to do that, and on the case law that's clear that he has a burden to come forward with evidence to support his claims.
Your opening brief didn't address equal protection, did it?
It did. Oh, my opening brief. I'm sorry. It did not, and that's because he did not plead it in his complaint.
But it was litigated pretty heavily in the motion to compel, wasn't it? That's what he was seeking all of that data for, wasn't it?
That was for the Monell claim, I believe, is what he was seeking it for, to show a custom or policy or practice of racial profiling within the city. And to that point, Your Honor, all the court held in that order was that Mr. Jones should bear the financial cost of the copies of the documents he was seeking, as they were very voluminous. So the court did not limit him in his ability to obtain any documents, simply said he has to pay the cost of those copies, and Mr. Jones chose not to do so. So any failure to obtain documents to support, whether it be an equal protection claim or a Monell claim, certainly he was not inhibited by the court or by the defendant in that matter. And just to finalize my point on the equal protection claim, not only was he on notice that he had come forth with all of his evidence under Rule 56 and the case law, analyzing that, the court in that motion to compel order ruled that he had not raised that in his complaint. So he was then on notice that that was an issue that he would have to address if he intended to raise it. And finally, there was no evidence in the district court or here that he was treated any differently than somebody in an unprotected class or because of his race. All he says is that Elkhart is known for this thing. That's not evidence to support either an equal protection claim or a Monell claim. I have nothing further unless you have any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are out of time, but I'll give you 1 minute, Mr. Grimes. And this whole issue of qualified immunity, I mean, that's problematic for you. You didn't challenge it. And so
we
had error here.
I'm sorry?
I said even if there was error, they're covered by that qualified immunity ruling.
Even if they were?
Yeah, even if there was error.
Okay. No, they're not under state law. Given the false arrest claim, and as it relates to the issue of probable cause, that is a state law issue, which this court has recognized, and we do address that in our brief. The other point, there was no refusal at the station. If you recall, in looking at the video, Officer Moore was asked by Gorbel, were you at the scene? Did he refuse at the scene? And Gorbel says, well, he was back and forth, and I think that he did. That's what Gorbel said. Snyder wasn't there, so Snyder couldn't say anything. That's what Moore said when asked the question by Gorbel.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Grimes. We'll take the case under advisement.